The Labyrinth of the Heart, Sherry Gandy, SRC.
Welcome, everyone. I'm going to be your guide tonight. And for the first time, for the time that we'll be spending together tonight, and my goal is to make the labyrinth more accessible to you. Not everyone has access to a labyrinth to walk, but you'll find that there are many ways to use the labyrinth. And I'd like to show you what some of those ways are so that you can use the labyrinth in a way that resonates with your heart. Tonight, we'll explore the relationship between the labyrinth and ourselves and how it's been used over time for spiritual work and how we can use it today to help meet with and commune with the God of our hearts. Here's the beautiful labyrinth at Rosicrucian Park. And this photo was from the labyrinth walk after the Festival of Lights ritual on the winter solstice. And I just love this labyrinth. I find it so peaceful and nurturing and full of vibrancy. And it really resonates with my heart. So there are just so many different circumstances where I just get in the car and drive down to the labyrinth. And so I feel especially grateful to be able to have one close by. And so in this talk, I want to show you more how you can use this or any other labyrinth as a tool for meditation and connecting with your center, your divine self. Specifically, how the use of form can be used to help untangle the mind and bring ourselves into fuller being. Usually we think of labyrinths for walking meditations, but how is the experience enhanced or different if we use it in another way? And when we do walk it, how is it different than if we just walked in a maze or circle spiraling to the center? My thesis here is that the geometry, the design, and the environment of the labyrinth help to balance our polarities on multiple levels, allowing for a potent connection with the God of our hearts. One of the goals of the spiritual life is to become a congruent being as much as we can. And congruency means that we're working with all parts of ourselves, that we are fully complete beings. As we work with our master within, and over the course of our lives, birth new selves and dreams and attitudes and ideas into the light, we constantly reinvent ourselves as students along the path. Through this back and forth process of involution and evolution, we continue to refine our personalities and work to develop ourselves. We'll be looking at how the labyrinth can be used for this task and the journey along its path and into and out of its center is ripe with inspiring possibilities. So here are some of the key words and ideas to look for throughout the presentation. You'll find that these recur and they'll serve as a thread as we journey into the labyrinth tonight. Center. Path, divine feminine, divine masculine, sun, solar, moon, lunar, positive polarity, negative polarity, Jerusalem, Troy, Omphalos, which means the navel of the earth or an important center on the earth, sacred marriage, rose, womb, birth, Mary, Jesus, Theseus, Ariadne, Minotaur, light, and star. These are the words of the divine feminine character known as Protonoia. That's a Greek name. It's translated into English as first thought. In some Christian Gnostic text, she is the first being that is emanated from the Creator. And here is what she says. I am invisible within the thought of the invisible one, although I am revealed in the immeasurable and the ineffable. I am incomprehensible, dwelling in the incomprehensible, although I move in every creature. Through me comes knowledge. I inhabit the ineffable and the unknowable. I am perception and knowledge, uttering voice by means of thought. I resonate in everyone, and they know it, since a seed is in them. I am before all, and I am all, since I am in everyone. I am androgynous. I am mother, and I am father, since I mate with myself. I mate with myself, since it is myself that I love. Through me alone, the all stands firm. I am the womb that puts forth the all by giving birth to light shining in splendor. I am the age to come. I am the fulfillment of all, the glory of the mother. This is from a Christian Gnostic text called Three Forms of First Thought. Scholars believe that it was written in the second century, and it's from the Nag Hammadi Library of Ancient Texts found in Nag Hammadi, Egypt in 1945. I present this to you because this giving, loving, feminine aspect of divinity is reflecting our divine selves back to us. She is birthing and embracing us. And it's a beautiful description of the knowing, nurturing wisdom in our hearts. With the theme of this symposium being meeting the God of our heart, I immediately thought of this piece. At this time of year, the Divine Mother is such an important figure. And especially here at the winter solstice, at this time in many traditions, the Divine Mother, sometimes called the Great Mother, gives birth to the Divine Son, who is usually associated with the power of the light. So the Divine Masculine comes at the time of greatest darkness. And this includes, in different traditions, Mithras, the Egyptian god Horus, in Welsh mythology, the divine child, the Mabon, and of course, the Master Jesus. And she says in this passage that we all carry this light, and she refers to the sacred marriage that our higher selves exist in and are guiding us toward. And she's very much connected to the labyrinth, and we'll explore this throughout the talk. So now we'll discuss some aspects that go into the labyrinth and contribute to its symbolism and spiritual power, and conclude with a labyrinth meditation. So to start out our conversation, I would like to make a distinction that labyrinths are different than mazes. So in a labyrinth, you generally have one center and a set path to that center. And it's about the journey to the center and back. And in a maze, and you can see this maze here over on the right side, and a maze can have multiple entries and paths and dead ends. And in many ways, it's about solving a puzzle. And this is a diagram of a maze at an estate in the UK called Chevening. Labyrinths are found all over the world, and we are familiar with the classical labyrinth form above left, primarily from Crete and mythology surrounding Crete. But this form also may have been in Scandinavia, even before Crete. Labyrinths are used for meditation, pilgrimage, self-renewal, for preparation for spiritual work, for fertility rituals and dances, and even childbirth. The labyrinth is about the journey into the sacred darkness and depths and back out into the light. It's about a journey into the womb and back out into that light shining in splendor that first thought enunciated. It can also be about a journey going into the God of our heart and then coming back out into the world carrying new light. And the labyrinth serves as a device of entrapment if there's something you want to leave behind before emerging back out into the world. The labyrinth is a symbol of and a tool for navigating between our spiritual and profane natures. The labyrinth is a universal human symbol. And some believe that it goes back to the Paleolithic, the late Ice Age, when humans were creating remarkable drawings and paintings in caves. The interiors of the caves were dark and winding formations of stone. And in many, the concentration of the most sacred artwork was in the deepest, darkest center. When we made the cognitive leap to create art and symbols, the labyrinth form was created out of the need to symbolize the sacred space that served as a container for the inhabitants' sacred activities and paintings and drawings, which were part of the sacred activity. And for the psycho-spiritual processes undertaken during the shamanic journey of the participants. In some spaces, there is only room for one or even just a few inhabitants. And in looking at the shapes above, you can also see how this could be a representation of the brain or perhaps even of a fingerprint. The labyrinth is also associated with the sacred feminine and shifts of consciousness. The second image here is called a chakra vayuha, and it's an ancient Indian birthing labyrinth. It's a two-dimensional labyrinth used in childbirth, or was used in childbirth. The diagram would have been consecrated by a priest at the time of birth. So the woman who's giving birth would have to enter mentally the entrance and then follow its winding path in deep concentration. She would have to find the center and then make her way back out again. The idea being that the mental movement through the pattern makes her do the same thing to her womb, helping to use her powers of concentration to make for an easier childbirth. And this photograph on the far right is called a Troy stone. And this particular stone was passed down through generations of wise women. It was used for gaining states of altered consciousness. The wise woman would trace her finger over the labyrinth back and forth while humming a specific chant or intonation until she reached a transcendent state. And this stone is located in the Witchcraft Museum in Cornwall, UK. And the Native American Hopi refer to the labyrinth figure as Mother Earth, it being the universal plan of the creator. Labyrinths usually have names, which is an interesting fact, but labyrinths were usually named after noted Mediterranean cities that had been constructed in an archetypal form of a holy city with seven surrounding walls and an interior shrine in the middle. And these cities were typically Babylon, Nineveh, Jericho, Troy, and Jerusalem. In these instances, the center of the world was a macrocosm of the labyrinth, and the labyrinth was a microcosm of the city being the omphalos of the world. So here on this slide, you can see on the far left, this is a moon-shaped labyrinth that was designed after the city of Jericho. And this middle image is an ancient map of Jerusalem and Palestine, designed to feature them as the center of the world. And here on the far right, we have the diagram of the Shark Labyrinth, which we'll take a look at shortly, and you can see the similarities. As Christianity became more widespread, labyrinths began to reference Jerusalem as their source of inspiration. When pilgrims did manage to travel to Jerusalem, the city was laid out so that they traveled through it in a specific pattern. And in Britain, labyrinths were even called paths to Jerusalem. And this leads us to the most recognizable pavement labyrinth in the world, that of Chartres Cathedral in France. Here, the labyrinth was called the Jerusalem Way, or the League. It wasn't, traveling through it didn't exactly take you an entire league of distance, but it's meant more in a metaphorical way, that it was a great distance. The cathedral itself was built, the current Gothic cathedral itself was built from 1194 to 1260. And the labyrinth was built around the year 1200. And this labyrinth is considered the sign of a master mason. And we'll get an up-close view of it shortly. So in this photo, taken by the amazing photographer Elaine Killar, you can see the labyrinth here on the floor, on the pavement. And if you look at the plan over here, you see that the labyrinth is closer to the entrance. The entrance is here down at the bottom of the plan. So in the photograph, when you look far into the church, that is looking way to the back of the plan right here. So the labyrinth is shortly presented to you after you enter the cathedral. There are some exquisite details about the Chartres labyrinth that make it a stellar example of the power of the labyrinth. In the Middle Ages, many cathedrals had labyrinths, and labyrinths were symbols of the pilgrimage to Jerusalem. Since many pilgrims couldn't actually travel to Jerusalem, they instead traveled to the cathedrals and undertook the journey of the labyrinth, either on their knees or walking. The journey around the labyrinth represented the soul's journey to the heavenly Jerusalem, referred to from the Book of Revelation. And the cathedral itself was a symbol of the heavenly Jerusalem. The author Nigel Pennock, in The Ancient Art of Geomancy, says that the pilgrimage along the labyrinth would have to be made at times when the currents beneath the omphalos were at their height. For instance, on the church's patronal festivals or solar solstices, barefoot, so as to absorb the sacred energies, the dance to the center would be a solemn yet joyous occasion when enlightened spiritual experiences might be received by the pilgrim. This cathedral, like other Notre Dame cathedrals, is dedicated to the Virgin Mary. This site has been dedicated to the Divine Feminine for a very long time. This is even the spot where Druid lore predicted the birth of a son to a virgin. And sacred structures have been built on this spot for thousands of years. The area was originally named for the Carnutes, a Celtic tribe who worshiped Isis, and they held their seat of power here. And the name was later changed to Chartres. The cathedral features multiple statues of Mary holding and enfolding Jesus. The rose was a symbol of Mary, and there are rose windows on three different sides of the cathedral. This one that you see here is on the southwest wall above the main entrance, which is called the Royal Portal. Now, most churches are oriented east-west, so the altar would be in the east. At Chartres, the central axis of the cathedral is actually oriented in a northeast-southwest orientation, along the path of the summer solstice sunrise and the winter solstice sunset. So the southwest is the direction of the winter solstice sunset. Fittingly, the southwest rose window above the entrance features Christ as judge at the second coming. And so here in this photograph here, the outside facade, you can see the rose window here, up high there between the two towers. And here in the interior shot, you can see this central figure of Christ here with his arms out at judgment. Now, if this rose window were to be folded down over the labyrinth, the central window with Jesus would fall into the center of the labyrinth, This would make the rose window with Christ be embraced by the rosette in the center of the labyrinth. Remembering that the rose here is a symbol of Mary, here we see the celebration of the Divine Mother and the Divine Son together in the center of the labyrinth. Now, for those of you who really like numbers, we have a little numbers game here with the labyrinth. And this is an up-close view, so we can look at the symbolism while we go through it here. This is known as an 11-circuit labyrinth, which means that it has 11 concentric rings around the center. Those 11 concentric rings represent the solar sunspot cycle of a little over 11 years. These little dips here, as you go along the outer edge, those are called cusps. There are 112 cusps, and those form the outer perimeter, and they mark 6 lunar cycles every 112 years. If we take 112 and divide it by 6, we get 18.6, which is almost 19, which is actually the metonic cycle, which is a calibration of the solar and lunar calendars. When you look at the image, you can see that it's divided into 4 quadrants, and those quadrants form a cross. If we take the 112 cusps and divide them by 4, we get 28, which is the average lunar month period. And when we look at the design, it's constructed with 272 stones, which is the number of days in the range of the female gestation cycle. So you can see how the labyrinth and its geometry is the coming together of the solar and lunar, the sun and the moon, the divine masculine and the divine feminine. And this theme is echoed throughout the cathedral, but it's all captured here in the microcosm of the labyrinth. Here on the far left, we have a diagram, an illustration of a mosaic labyrinth from Cyprus with the image of Ariadne, Theseus, and the Minotaur. At the center of the Chart labyrinth, there used to be a square copper plate with the depiction of Theseus, Ariadne, and the Minotaur. We don't know exactly what it looked like, but we do know that it had Theseus, Ariadne, and the Minotaur. This was melted down for cannon metal in 1793. And here, this image on the far right, this is actually my favorite. This is graffiti from Pompeii. So while we don't know the date of the graffiti, we do know that it was before 79 CE, which is when Pompeii was covered in ash. And so this says here, the labyrinth is the habitat of the Minotaur. So the Minotaur, which many of you are familiar with, is a mythical being in a lot of different myths throughout the Greek myth world. And he has the head of a bull and the body of a man. And I'll give you a short version of the Greek myth. The god Poseidon gave a beautiful white bull to King Minos on Crete to be used as a sacrifice back to Poseidon. But King Minos thought it was so beautiful that he decided to keep it. And he decided to sacrifice a less beautiful bull to the god. Well, this angered Poseidon, and so he decided to curse King Minos and his wife, Pasiphae, by making Pasiphae fall in love with the beautiful white bull. So she employs the architect Daedalus to help her meet the bull, and so she ends up having a child by the bull, and this is the Minotaur. Well, Minos is completely not happy with this situation. So he banishes the Minotaur to the center of the labyrinth. The labyrinth was created also by the crafty architect Daedalus, And Minos was so angry at Daedalus that he also banished him and his son Icarus to the labyrinth. Now, the Minotaur only ate humans. And it turns out that the city of Athens was indebted to King Minos, so they would have to send young people as sacrifices to the Minotaur. To end this, Theseus, the son of the king of Athens, decides that he will pose as a youth and go to Crete to kill the Minotaur to stop the sacrifices. So he arrives in Crete, and Ariadne, the daughter of King Minos, falls in love with Theseus and helps him in his quest. She gives him a ball of magic thread, and this magic thread helps him find the center of the labyrinth. So he goes in and kills the Minotaur, and then the thread helps him get back out of the labyrinth. So they leave the island. Theseus leaves with Ariadne, and he receives a message from Dionysus to leave Ariadne on the island of Naxos. So he does. And Ariadne ends up marrying Dionysus, and eventually she commits suicide. And Daedalus and his son also escape the labyrinth by creating wings of wax. So they fly out, but Icarus flies too close to the sun, and his wings melt, causing him to drown. Now, in this myth, the Minotaur is seen as our beastly, earthly self that needs to be slain and triumphed over. And Ariadne is left to fend for herself and dies. But there's another side to the story. The Minotaur had a name, Asterius, which means starry one. And Ariadne's name means shining one. The Greeks rewrote important characters in Cretan myths when they were conquering the island. Ariadne was an incarnation of the cow moon goddess, and Asterius the Minotaur was an incarnation of the star bull god, and he was her consort. And in fact, there's a tablet from Crete that indicates that Ariadne, or a character like her, was considered the lady of the labyrinth. And they performed a fertility dance along the path of and into the center of the labyrinth. And here we have a representation of the sacred marriage taking place at the center of the labyrinth. The theme of a woman or a younger woman at the center of the labyrinth exists in many different cultures. In fact, throughout mythology in Afghanistan, Ethiopia, Scandinavia, and Germany. The author Jodi Lorimer does a beautiful catalog of work on the origins of the labyrinth and the Minotaur. And it turns out that the Minotaur goes back to the Paleolithic, back to the caves. So the Minotaur in the middle of the labyrinth is very ancient. Bulls have been revered, worshipped, and interacted with in many cultures throughout time. In some caves, the Minotaur was even dancing in the middle of a labyrinth. This suggests that the Minotaur, half bull and half man, was actually a shaman. And his ability as a shaman to negotiate worlds of different consciousnesses, be it spirit, human, or animal, placed him at the center of the spiritual process. His power was confined to the center because it was a result of the center. So while the Minotaur shaman represented our earthly bestial self, he also represented the transformation that can happen into a bright star. He transformed into a bright star and fulfilled his potential through the union with the divine. And while the Minotaur certainly is representative of our animal natures, it's also a symbol of our ability to transform into bright lights and go back and forth between these polarities. You can also see this as going into the darkness as being of the feminine polarity and the emerging into light as a masculine polarity. This image here is by the German artist Albrecht Dürer, and it's called the Madonna on the Crescent. And this particular woodcut here was made to be a frontispiece to a body of work he did called The Life of the Virgin, in 1511. And this features Mary as the Queen of Heaven, as the Divine Mother, as the goddess bathed in the sun and cradled by the moon. And you can also see here, it looks like she's also cradled in the horns of a bull. And here she's encapsulating the many roles of the divine feminine. And this particular motif refers to the beginning of chapter 12 in the book of Revelation. There's an anonymous woman at the beginning of that chapter, at the beginning of the book. And the book of Revelation says, "A great portent appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. She was pregnant." Now, this anonymous woman is reflected in the mythology of many different cultures, from ancient Babylonia, Egypt, Greece, Rome, and the Hebrew Bible. But here, he's extended it to be Mary and the Christ. And as at the rose window, we see Jesus at the second coming being enfolded by the rosette. So here we have, again, the power and the beauty of the mother, of the divine feminine, to carry and hold us. The divine feminine and divine masculine come together in the heart of the labyrinth, and the coming together of the polarities in the heart of the labyrinth in the center is the key. And this represents how we can perform this alchemical act as well, by meeting and accepting all parts of ourselves and using the power of the center to integrate them. And we'll end this part of the presentation with a quote from H. Spencer Lewis. This is from an article that he wrote, a piece that was recently featured in the Rosicrucian Forum just this year. So it just came out a few months ago. And this is from a piece called "Making the Divine a Companion." And he says, "It is only by purposefully, realizingly making the divine our companion that we bring ourselves outwardly in attunement with all the constructive, creative forces of the world as we are inwardly attuned." So in our next part here, we are now preparing for our labyrinth meditation. And before we do that, I want to describe a bit about how labyrinths actually work. So we've talked quite a bit about some of the other symbolism of what's happening in the labyrinth, but physically, how do they work? What's happening? Now, here in this picture, you can see different polarities going through the labyrinth. And many of you are used to the principle of different polarities because we use polarity in many of the Rosicrucian exercises and techniques. And one reason labyrinths are so potent is because the geometry of the path works to balance and synchronize our brains, our hearts, our fluids, and psychic centers. By constantly changing polarity, our systems become more tuned and refined to our purpose, and we can enter a higher state of consciousness. Labyrinths also attract underground water, and the electromagnetic effect of the water also exudes an influence on the body. In the ancient science of geomancy, Nigel Pennock says that in turf and pavement labyrinths, both of which we've looked at tonight, the patterns of forces in the earth below are translated into material form. Two-dimensional renderings of the waterline spirals below and tourbillons, vortices of energy above. Tourbillons are the transition places from the physical to the astral world, whose points of support are generated by the sacred dance on the sacred omphalos. And by omphalos, he simply means that the labyrinth is marking a place of central importance on the earth. On these multiple levels, physical, psychological, spiritual, and astral, the labyrinth acts as a boundary between various states of being, preventing the unauthorized from treading on the holy place, defining its nature to the initiate, and acting as a practical channel for the adept. So again, in this photograph, you can see, this is a photograph of the labyrinth at Rosicrucian Park, and we are facing the labyrinth here for one of the outermost rings. And as you come along, it has a positive polarity. And then we get to this middle place here in the arc where there's no polarity. And then we have a reversal back to negative polarity. So we're constantly going back and forth with positive and negative polarity. And I'm going to give you a quick demonstration right now. So for this demonstration, I'm going to switch over to the camera here. So I'm going to stop sharing and I'll show the camera on top of a photograph of the Chart Labyrinth. And then I'll show you a little section of how the polarity works. And then we'll go back and continue the presentation. But before I do that, so I'm just going to do a quick demonstration with a little pendulum here. It's just a piece of, it's a plastic sphere on a little nylon cord, so nothing special. And I have a charged battery here. It's just a Duracell AA battery. And a little dowel to help me point. Okay, so here, I'm going to bring this here. I have this picture of the labyrinth. And actually, before I start that, I will show you how I'm going to calibrate this to polarity. So I have this little Duracell battery here, right? This is the positive side, and the negative side is right here. So I'm just going to take this simple little pendulum, and here it's calibrated so that at the positive end, it's going clockwise. And I'm not moving this with my fingers. This is, it's reading the polarity from the battery. Here in the middle, you see there's no polarity. It's right in the middle. And then at the negative end, it's going to go counterclockwise. Again, I'm not changing it. This is just, it's reading the physical field of the battery. Okay, so now you know the principles. So here we have a picture of the labyrinth at Chart. And I'm going to put in this, put this here so you can actually see it against a solid background. And I'm just going to follow a little bit of the path here with this dowel. So pretend this dowel is your, this is someone walking the labyrinth. This can be your feet. So as we enter, the pendulum, you can see it's just neutral polarity. And then we get here to this point and it starts going counterclockwise. And we go around this ring counterclockwise, and we get here to this middle of the arc, and it just goes neutral. So no polarity there. Then we continue around. It's still counterclockwise. So it's still negative polarity. And then here, we're walking towards the center, and it's neutral. And then we turn here and start walking around the center and it becomes positive. So it's going clockwise. And we just keep going around here. And again, I'm not influencing the pendulum at all. It's, I'm focusing on the rings and it's just reading the polarity from the rings. So here, at the end of the arc, it's gone neutral. And then we come swing back around and it reverses itself. It's going counterclockwise. Then we get right here, stops and goes neutral, and then reverses and goes clockwise. So it's going positive again. So that's our demonstration. So now you understand the principles of how it's working. I'm just going to switch back to sharing my screen. Okay, so hopefully that was clear for everyone. And I have one more slide here before we go to our meditation. So you can also experience and feel this polarity shift happening in church cloisters. In this particular example, this is from Salisbury Cathedral in England, and it's actually a very subtle example. And this is the cloisters here at the cathedral. And you can see up in this diagram here, the plan view, the cloisters, it's this square shape that goes around this courtyard here. And in sacred geometry and the science of sacred number, the divine feminine is represented by the number 5. And the divine masculine is represented by the number 6. And this rosette design here in the arches, as you walk through the cloisters, it alternates back and forth between 5 and 6, between the feminine and the masculine polarities, or if you prefer, negative, positive polarities. So as you walk around the perimeter, the form and the geometry is acting upon you and shifting your system back and forth. And this helps prepare you for spiritual experience. And that's why there's a familiar theme of walking the cloisters before a spiritual experience. And so our journey ends at our beautiful labyrinth at Rosicrucian Park. This is based on the Chartres design, but with wide paths to be accessible to everyone. As we perambulate through, we're amongst a garden of beautiful native California plants and surrounded by oaks and Italian cypresses. And we are embraced, nurtured, and held by Mother Earth. And at the center, we have a beautiful rose motif. So we will now go into our labyrinth meditation. If you could sit comfortably, I invite you to sit in a way that's comfortable to you, preferably so your back is straight and your feet are on the floor and your hands are in your lap. And before we begin, we are going to take 3 positive breaths. And feel free to close your eyes during this part. And the positive breath is when you breathe in and hold your breath. For as long as is comfortable. And then exhale. And then repeat that. Breathe in as long as possible. And hold it as long as you can. Comfortably, and then exhale. And breathe in a final time and hold it as long as it's comfortable. And then exhale. And I'll give you a few moments to relish in that vital life force moving around your body now. And as we start our labyrinth meditation, you can have an intention, or you can come as a pilgrim seeking a spiritual experience. And if you're a Martinist even, you may want to perform the prayer of the heart as you move through it. We will use our eyes to move through the labyrinth. So you'll have to open your eyes and focus on the image of the labyrinth. And as we move through, we'll move through at a reasonable pace, not slow, but not fast. And we'll get to the center, and then we'll reverse course, follow the path, and then exit again. And we'll do that 3 times. I will guide you the first time, and then the rest you can make your way in and out as you see fit. So take in a deep breath. And we are at the entrance of the labyrinth, which is right here where my cursor is. And try to soften your eyes and still be able to see the labyrinth. And as we take a deep breath, we enter the labyrinth. And then we get to the first turn, and then we reverse direction. And as we move through, we reverse direction again. And then we walk along the exterior. And we get to a place where we turn in again. And then we turn and walk and turn again and walk. Now we're closer to the center. And we turn around and we go around the center. And now we're on the other side of the center. And we keep walking around, walking through the beautiful plants. You might be able to hear your feet crunching on the ground. And then we come around, and now we're on the long part of the exterior. And then we come around, and we're almost to the center. We keep turning a few more turns, and now we've entered the center. We're standing on the rose. Here we can feel the power of the center, along with our other fraters and sorors. If there's an intention that you brought in, you might get inspiration here at the center. If there's a problem you brought in, perhaps there's an answer here at the center. Or you could just let all your troubles and worries go here into the center, into Mother Earth. And as we exit the center, we follow the path back along and keep walking along the outside. You may even hear the birds now. We're emerging back out into the light. Back out. And we keep walking along the center. And then keep turning. And we keep reversing direction. And then we are walking along the long outside, the other exterior ring. And then we reverse direction, and then we are on our path out. And we're now outside the labyrinth. And we turn around and we enter it again. This time you can follow the path on your own, and I'll prompt when we should start our third entry into the labyrinth. And here again, at the center of the labyrinth, you can continue to follow through with any inspiration you might get, or relish in any relief you might get from a problem you brought into it. And then we exit back out of the center. And we're at the entrance again. And we turn around and begin our final trip inside the labyrinth. And we enter the center of the labyrinth for the last time. So feel a sense of completion of the spiritual work that you have done tonight. Feel the power of the center and how it can help. You commune with the God of your heart, or help with any kind of problem that you might have. Or just help fulfill the need for inspiration, or fulfill an intention that you brought into the labyrinth. And so we're exiting the center. And going around the exterior. And then we are back at the entrance of the labyrinth. So this concludes the presentation for the night. Thank you very much, Frauders and Sorors. And I hope that you have gained a few more ways to use the labyrinth in ways that might inspire you. And hopefully you're inspired to find a labyrinth to work with. It doesn't have to be a walking labyrinth. It could be any labyrinth that inspires you visually or three-dimensionally. Either is going to work. All right, so I send everyone off on this beautiful Thursday evening with many seasons, wishes, and happy holidays, everyone. Good night.